As Brother Charles mentioned in his good prayer, we should be thankful that we have this opportunity to come together to sing, to pray, and to study, and we're certainly grateful that you're here with us. We live in times when many seem to have no sense of commitment. They feel no obligation toward anybody or anything. With that being the case, perhaps it's a good time to remind ourselves of what commitment is and some areas in which it is needed. Commitment is defined as a pledge to do, the state of being bound emotionally or intellectually to a course of action or to another person or persons. May I call your attention to some areas in which you and I need to be a people of commitment? I suggest to you, first of all, that you and I need to have commitment when it comes to the Lord. Very few people these days seem to be very committed to the Lord. Have you noticed? Since He is the one who made us, we ought to feel some commitment toward Him. We read in Genesis chapter 1, where on the sixth day of creation, God said, "Let us make man after our image." And so God created man. Genesis 2:7 affirms that God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. The psalmist in Psalm 100 in verse 3 emphasized God as our creator when he said, "Know ye that the Lord, He is God, it is He that hath made us, and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture." Surely, as one who is made in the image of God, I ought to feel some commitment toward Him. But when an individual becomes married to Christ, he commits himself to the Lord in a special sense. In Romans chapter 7 and in verse 4, Paul said, "Ye also are become dead to the law." That is, they've been separated from the law of Moses by the body of Christ, that ye should be married to another. Who is that? Even to Him who is raised from the dead. That's the Lord. That we should bring forth fruit unto God. An individual becomes married to Christ when he hears the word of Christ, when he believes on Christ, when he repents of his sins as commanded by Christ, when he confesses his faith in Christ, and is baptized into Christ. It's at that point that you become married to the Lord. And as one who is married to the Lord, you need to be committed to Him. You need to recognize that you're bound to Him and feel that sense of obligation toward Him. In Revelation chapter 2 and in verse 10, the Lord said, "Be thou faithful unto death." That is, even to the taking of your life. At this time, there were Christians who were being put to death for their faith. Can you imagine living in circumstances like that, where you might be put to death because you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Because you had committed yourself to Him? The Lord said, "Fear none of those things. Be thou faithful unto death, and I'll give thee a crown of life." Being faithful even to the taking of my life involves me being committed, doesn't it? Having a strong sense of obligation to the Lord. When I think about those who were committed to the Lord, I think about the Apostle Paul. Think about all the things that he suffered as a Christian, as a gospel preacher. As a sampling of that, in the book of 2 Corinthians, in chapter 11, he said in verse 23, "Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one." That's 39. On 5 different occasions. "Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. in journeyings often in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. That's a lot of perils, isn't it? In weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, beside those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. A lot of people, if they were not committed, when a little of that came along, they'd probably just thrown up their hands and quit, wouldn't they? They'd probably said, if this is what serving the Lord is about, I'm not sure that's what I signed up for. But I appreciate the fact that Paul was committed. He had to have been to endure all that he did. And I like this statement that he made to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 12. You might like to jot this down and commit these words to memory. 2 Timothy 1:12. For the which cause I also suffer these things. Paul, we have a little question for you this afternoon. Why did you suffer all that? Nevertheless, I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day. You know why Paul suffered like he did? Because he was committed to the Lord. And if you and I could have some of that commitment, it'd serve us well, wouldn't it? Also, listen to these words, as expressed by the psalmist in Psalm 37 and in verse 5. Commit thy way unto the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And so, as you think about commitment today, and some areas in which we need it, first of all, we need commitment when it comes to the Lord. But then secondly, we need commitment when it comes to his church. You really can't talk about the Lord without talking about His church, for they go together. In fact, in the book of Ephesians, in chapter 5, Paul spoke at length concerning the husband-wife relationship, and then at the end he said in verse 32, I speak concerning Christ and the church. They go together. When we become members of the church, as we're baptized into one body, 1 Corinthians 12:13. Added by the Lord, Acts 2:47, we take on some commitments. First, I need to have commitment when it comes to attending. You know, Lord has always called His people together. When you go back in the Old Testament, there were numerous occasions on which the Lord's people were required to be together. In fact, there were three annual feast days of the Jews, as outlined in Deuteronomy 16, and the Lord required all the males to be in Jerusalem for those occasions. If you'd been a Jew under the law, would you have been committed to attending those feasts? As you come to the New Testament, you find the Lord often calls His people together. I'll read in Acts chapter 2 concerning those who are added to the church by the Lord, how that in verse 46, they continuing daily with one accord in the temple, and breaking bread from house to house, did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. The Lord's people were together daily. We read where upon the first day of the week, disciples came together, Acts 29, verse 7. In Acts 12, we find an example where a gospel preacher was put in prison. And the church was together praying for him. Acts 12 and verse 5. That was Peter. And the book of Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25 instructs us, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as ye see the day approaching. And so we're not to abandon the assembling of ourselves together. When the Lord's people come together, I need to be there. I need to feel a sense of commitment to be there. I should want to be there. It's kind of like the psalmist in the Old Testament who said, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. What better place to be? Where would you rather be than in the house of the Lord with the Lord's people? We need commitment to that. We need a sense of commitment not only to attend, but also to work. There's work to do. There's work on every hand. And the Lord needs workers. In fact, one of the things for which you and I are taught to pray is to pray for workers. In Matthew chapter 9 and in verse 37, the Lord said to his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest, that he'll send forth laborers into his harvest. This morning, as we talked about what we become when we become Christians, we emphasize the fact that we are laborers in the vineyard. That's what the Lord's talking about here. And we need to pray for more laborers, send laborers. And I need to have a commitment toward that. I need to feel a sense of obligation to work in the Lord's vineyard. For my labor is not in vain in the Lord. 1 Corinthians 15 and in verse 58. You know, there may be some who have a sense of obligation when it comes to secular work. They wouldn't think about missing work. They wouldn't think about being negligent when it comes to the responsibilities to an employer. But then when it comes to the work of the Lord, they just don't feel much obligation toward that. We can do better than that, can't we? We need obligation when it comes to worshiping in the church. In John 4, verse 24, God is a spirit. And they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. What's your attitude toward worship? That's one of the great privileges we have. To be able to worship God with the people of God. To come together like this. To blend our voices in songs, praising God and teaching and admonishing one another. To come together around this volume to read and to study. To partake of the Lord's Supper, the memorial to the Lord's death. To give of our means to support the greatest work on earth. To lift up our voice in prayer unto God. Worship. When it comes to the church, we ought to feel a sense of commitment when it comes to giving. We often think of that in terms of finances. How that upon the first day of the week, Paul said, let every one of you lay by him in store. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. And we need to be committed to that. But there are other areas in which we need to give. How do I feel about giving up my time and my talents and my energies? How committed am I? When it comes to the church, we need to be committed to each other, recognizing that we're brothers and we're sisters. The Lord said in John 13 and in verse 34, a new commandment I give unto you. Lord, I'd like to know what that is. What is that new commandment? That ye love one another. Notice he didn't put a period there. He didn't just say love one another, but he told us how to do that. As I have loved you. How much love did the Lord have for us, by the way? Well, in John chapter 15 and in verse 13, he said, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if you do whatsoever I command you, he said. John 15, 13, 14. You know the kind of love the Lord had for us? He laid down his life for us. And the Lord teaches us to love one another in that same way. That takes some commitment. If I'm going to lay down my life for you, I'm committed to you, right? And when I'm willing to lay down my life for you, can you think of anything I'm not willing to do for you? You know, sometimes there are those who you might get the feeling you're imposing on them. Can you really impose on a brother if he's willing to lay down his life for you? We ought to feel a sense of obligation toward each other, to love one another. And so when it comes to the church that belongs to Christ, that was purchased with his blood, Acts 20 and verse 28, my commitment ought to be as strong to her as it is to the Lord. How are we doing when it comes to these commitments? But then let me suggest to you a third area in which we need to be committed, not just to the Lord and to his church, but we need a strong sense of commitment when it comes to our family. Let me think with you about three things in regard to that. First of all, when it comes to the husband-wife relationship, there needs to be a strong commitment to one spouse. Unfortunately, there are those today that marry, then divorce the next, and remarry and divorce, and they don't really feel a sense of commitment. They look upon marriage as something lightly, that you do today and undo the next, and some intermarriage with the thinking that if it doesn't work out, we can always get a divorce. Well, if that's your thinking, it probably won't work out. The Lord taught that there's to be some permanence. There's to be a commitment. In Matthew chapter 19 and verse 3, the Pharisees asked this question: is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? We might say it this way: would it be okay to get a divorce for just any reason? Well, most people in our society think so. But what's the Bible say? What's the Lord say about that? Look at verse 4. Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. That goes back to Genesis 2, when God made man and woman, and brought them together in marriage. And then the Lord says in verse 6, wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, what's the rest of that? Let not man put asunder. So what's the answer to their question? No, it's not lawful for a man to put away his wife. God made no provision for that at the beginning. In fact, in verse 8, he said, from the beginning it was not so. What was not so from the beginning? Divorce? No divorce. And yet today in this country in which we live, about half of marriages end in divorce. Is it possible that if more people were more committed to the Lord and more committed to their spouse, there'd be less divorce? And in verse 9, the Lord said, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away, doth commit adultery. Our young men and our young ladies need to be impressed with God's marriage law. That when you marry, when you say, I do, you've made a commitment. And that's a lifelong commitment. As Paul in Romans chapter 7 emphasized, he said in verse 2, the woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband. How long? How long is she bound to her husband? So long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then if while her husband liveth, and she be married to another man, that's someone other than her husband, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man. You see, God's arrangement is one man for one woman for life. That takes commitment, doesn't it? We need husbands who are committed to loving their wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for, Ephesians 5:25. Husbands who are committed to loving their wives as their own bodies, Ephesians 5:28. Wives who are committed to reverencing her husband, Ephesians 5:33. Who are committed to submitting to his headship, as Paul talked about in Ephesians 5 and in verse 24. How committed are we in that relationship? But also, in the family, there needs to be commitment
to children.
It pains me when I hear stories and see things on the news of children that are abused and neglected in lots of different ways. As parents obviously feel no commitment to their children. When you choose to become a husband or a wife, you take on responsibility. You need some commitment. But when you have children, you bring little boy or girl into this world, you ought to feel commitment toward them, to provide for them. You're bound to them. You owe them some things. Sometimes I talk in the sermon about what we owe our children. We owe them a lot, don't we? We ought to be committed to love them, to nurture them, to bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6 and verse 4, to train up a child in the way he should go, as the wise man talks about, to love them and to teach them. We need to have commitment when it comes to our parents. There are those who feel no obligation toward their parents. And yet Paul said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Ephesians 6:1. Honor thy father and mother, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. Verses 2 and 3. There may come a time when you need to take care of your parents. You remember 1 Timothy 5 and 4 when Paul said, if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. You may have a parent that's not able to provide for themselves. Do you feel committed? Do you feel a sense of obligation to them? To take care of them? So we need commitment to the family in the husband-wife relationship and the parent-child relationship. But also we need commitment when it comes to another area. And that is when it comes to our job, the work that we do with our hands. Too many expect something for nothing. That's why this country is in the shape that it's in. A lot of people, instead of working for what they have, they'd rather let somebody else do the work and then the government take it and give it to them. Or there are those who would just as soon steal something as to work for it. In Ephesians 4 and 28, Paul said, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. You know, one reason we work is not just so we have, that we can provide for our own, but that we might have to give to him that needeth. The Lord provided for the needy. When he gave your hands to work, that you might be able to help those who are in a position where they may not be able to do that. Notice he didn't just say work with your hands. He said the thing that is good. There may be some things that you might do with these hands that might be called work or job or occupation or employment that wouldn't be good, wouldn't be wholesome, would be opposed to what is right in the sight of God. And so work with your hands a thing that is good that you might have to give to him that needs it. We need to be committed to that. When I take a job, I need to have a sense of obligation to that employer. To do the best job that I can do, to be there on time. That's important, isn't it? It says something about me. I need to show a good attitude in my work because I'm representing the Lord, aren't I? I belong to him. Remember when Paul asked that question, is Christ divided? He said, were you baptized in the name of Paul? Or was Paul crucified for you? You see, we're of Christ because Christ was crucified for us and we're baptized in the name of Christ. And when folks know that I'm a Christian, that I belong to Christ, what kind of an example is that going to set when on the job I'm dishonest? I'm not hardworking. I have a bad attitude. I lose my temper. I use bad language. I'm not reliable. I'm not faithful. I just show up from time to time when it's convenient for me. In the book of Ephesians, in chapter 6, in verse 5, Paul said, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart as unto Christ. Not with eye service. Hey, you better get to work. The boss is here. He's looking. He's watching. As men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to man, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And so there needs to be commitment to the job as a worker, as a servant, as an employee, but also one who's in a position of oversight as an employer needs to feel some obligation toward his employees. That goes both ways. It's sad that there are some employees that don't feel much obligation toward the employer, but you know, there's a lot of employers that don't have that sense of responsibility and commitment and obligation toward their workers. And in verse 9 of Ephesians 6, Paul said, "You masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is the respect of persons with him." So there needs to be commitment on the job. I'll tell you another area in which you and I need to be committed, and that is there needs to be commitment when it comes to what we say. It used to be that a man's word was his bond. The fellow would say, "I'm going to do this," and he'd do it. Now you have to have everything in writing, and that may not be any good. It's hard to get a verbal agreement, isn't it? If I say I'm going to do something, guess what? I better do it. In the book of Ecclesiastes in chapter 5, the Lord said in verse 2, "Be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God, for God is in heaven and thou upon earth. Therefore let thy words be few." In verse 4, he declared, "When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it. For he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Better is it that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay." In Matthew chapter 5 and in verses 33 through 37, the Lord said, "Swear not at all." You know, a lot of people swear. They don't think anything about it. The Lord said, "Swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil." What's that teaching us? When you say yes, that means yes. And when you say no, that means no. That you're a man of your word. You're a woman of your word. That you mean what you say. And you say what you mean. And when you do that, you don't have to swear, do you? Remember a story in the Old Testament about a man that really made a rash vow? He said he was going to do something, and perhaps he really didn't think about all the ramifications of that. There's a man by the name of Jephthah in Judges chapter 11. Verses 30 through 39. During the time when God had judges to rule his people, the Lord's people were in battle with the Ammonites. And Jephthah said in verse 30, "Lord, if thou shalt without fail deliver the children of Ammon into mine hands, then it shall be that whatsoever cometh forth of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the children of Ammon shall surely be the Lord's, and I'll offer it up for a burnt offering." So here's what he's saying. "Lord, if you'll give me victory over the Ammonites, whatever comes out of my house when I come home, I'll offer it as a sacrifice." Guess what? The Lord kept his end of that. He gave the Ammonites into the hand of Jephthah. And in verse 34, Jephthah came to Mizpah unto his house. And guess who came out? The Bible says, "Behold, his daughter came out to meet him." And she was his only child. Now, he just said, whatever comes out of the door of my house, I'm going to offer to the Lord. His daughter comes out. Now, if you'd been taught that when you vow to the Lord, defer not to pay it, what would you have had to do? Verse 39 says, concerning Jephthah, who did with her according to his vow which he had vowed. Jephthah made a vow, didn't he? But you know what? The Bible indicates that he kept his vow. He was a man of his word. Sometimes we may say some things that are to our hurt. We may enter into an agreement. We hadn't really thought about all the ramifications of that. And it may cost us more than we intended to pay, right? But we need to have a sense of commitment to what we say. And then finally, as you think about an area in which we need to be committed, what about when it comes to ourselves? Do we need to make some commitment to ourselves? I believe we do. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 16, Paul said, take heed unto who? Thyself. You know, sometimes there are those who have a tendency to take heed to everybody else. Right? But this passage tells me I need to take heed to myself and unto the doctrine. Continuing then from doing this, thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. I have enough to keep up with to just take heed to myself without trying to take heed to everybody else. What about you? That's a full-time job, isn't it? Just to take care of self. When you think about commitment to ourselves, what about making a commitment to behave ourselves? You know, in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15, Paul said, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. Basically, what he said prior to that was designed to help us know how it is that we're to behave ourselves as Christians. He talked about the qualifications of elders and deacons and their wives. He said in verse 2, a bishop must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity, not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall under reproach in the snare of the devil. Likewise must the deacons be grave, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre, holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. Even so must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. Let the deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children and their own house as well. I need to be committed to myself in such a way that I'm going to behave myself as a Christian. I need to have a commitment when it comes to exercise. And I'm not talking about getting out on the treadmill. I'm talking about what Paul had in mind when he said in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 7, but refuse profane and old wives' fables and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. For bodily exercise profiteth little. But godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. I need to be disciplined when it comes to exercising myself to godliness, applying myself to godly living and godly principles. I need to be committed to giving myself. In 1 Timothy 4 and verse 15, Paul said, meditate upon these things. Give thyself wholly to them, that thy profiting may appear to all. You see, others can see progress in us when we give ourselves to a thing. And that's true when it comes to spiritual things. Meditating on these things and giving ourselves how? Wholly or entirely to them. That takes commitment, doesn't it? It takes commitment to keeping oneself pure. In 1 Timothy 5:22, Paul said, keep thyself pure. I can't do that for you. You can't do that for me. That's an individual responsibility. As he said, keep thyself pure. And that takes some commitment. To do that, we've got to think on pure things. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Hard to be pure when we fill our minds with all kinds of impurities, right? Remember Proverbs 23:7, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. So I need to be committed to keeping myself pure, guarding my heart when it comes to what I see and what I hear, because the mind is made up of two things, basically. What I see and what I hear. And the Bible warns us about both. The Bible talks about the lust of the eyes, 1 John 2:15 through 17. And the Lord said, take heed what you hear. You've got to be careful about that because it influences us. If I'm going to keep myself pure, I've got to be committed to that, day in and day out. I need to be committed to study, to show myself approved unto God, as Paul talked about in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 15. And then finally, when it comes to commitment to self, we need to be committed and devoted to showing ourselves a pattern. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 7, Paul said, in all things showing thyself a pattern. You know what a pattern is? Like a blueprint. You might think of a seamstress that when she makes a garment out of fabric, she has a pattern. She lay over it, pin to it, and she cuts the fabric out according to the pattern. Or a carpenter that builds a house by the pattern, by the blueprint. I need to conduct myself, live in such a way that I become a pattern for other people. A pattern in attitude, a pattern in speech, a pattern in how to live. Showing thyself a pattern in good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity. It's important that you and I be a people of commitment. That starts by being committed to the Lord. And it takes in lots of areas, doesn't it? To His church, to our family, to our job, to what we say, and to ourselves. And you might think of some other areas too. But surely those six are enough to impress us with the concept of commitment, what it is, and some places where it's needed. As you think about commitment to the Lord, in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, we read these words concerning those of Macedonia in verse 5. They first gave their own selves to the Lord. That's where it all starts. Can we really expect to be committed to anything if we're not really committed to the Lord? Suppose we find something out here in the world that we're committed to, but we're not committed to the Lord. What real value is there in that? There may be those this afternoon who've not yet given themselves to the Lord. You've not committed yourself to the Lord. You've not become married to Christ. You've not been baptized in the Lord. Why not do that? Why not pledge your love and your faithfulness to Him? He's given Himself for you. Won't you give yourself for Him? Having heard His word, would you believe it? Would you be willing to obey it and repenting of your sins, confessing your faith and being baptized? To become married to Christ? And as one who's become married to Christ, don't go back on your commitments. Take that seriously. And be faithful to Him all the days of your life. Come what may, even if that involves suffering persecution, like Paul. Even if it involves the taking of your life, to not go back on that commitment that you made the Lord. Because heaven will surely be worth it all. The Lord said, be thou faithful unto death, and I'll give you a crown of life. If I want that crown of life at the end, I've got to be faithful. I've got to keep my commitment to the Lord. Not always easy. It wasn't for Paul. But he kept it. He said, I've kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love His appearing. Do we love His appearing enough to commit our way unto Him. Maybe you've already obeyed the gospel, but you've not been as committed as you need to be. You've not been as faithful and loyal. You've gone back on your commitments. You'd like to straighten all that up through repenting of whatever it is you're guilty of and praying to God for forgiveness. We're here to help you. As together we stand and sing.